Chapter 32, The American Kingdoms, The Mayans of Central America. Christopher Columbus and Amerigo Vespucci called America a new world because they had never seen it before. But people had been living in this new world for thousands of years before Columbus or Amerigo ever arrived. These Native American peoples are sometimes still called Indians because Columbus gave them this name, thinking that he had reached India. But of course, Columbus had not reached India at all. He had reached the Americas. There are two American continents, North America, the continent on the top of your map, and South America, the continent at the bottom. The bridge of land that links them together is called Central America. When Columbus landed in the New World, he landed on islands just across from Central America. He wrote in his journal, "Men and women came out to meet us. Their hair is black and short in front, combed forward. They paint themselves with black and white. Some have scars on their bodies. They tell me that these scars come from battles with other people who live nearby, and who try to capture them and make them slaves." Central America had its own empires during the Middle Ages, and those empires fought wars with each other, just like the empires over in Europe and Asia. The first great empire of Central America was the Mayan Empire. The Mayans lived on the Yucatan Peninsula, which lies between the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea. Today, the Yucatan Peninsula is part of Mexico. The Mayans began to build great cities at the same time that Rome was falling apart. These cities lasted for hundreds of years, but not all the Mayans lived in their cities. Only the most powerful people, kings, noblemen, and governors, lived in the cities. The less important Mayans, such as farmers and craftsmen, lived in the jungles of Central America and came to cities to trade and to worship the gods. Worshiping the gods was an important part of Mayan life. Stone pyramids with temples on top were built in all of the Mayan cities. The Mayan kings who sacrificed in these temples were said to be descended from the sun god. They tried to make themselves look godlike by filing their front teeth into fangs and painting their faces. When the kings were babies, their mothers would tie pieces of wood tightly around their heads. The wood made their skulls grow up into a peak, so Mayan kings had heads that sloped straight back from their eyebrows and were pointed on top, a sign of divine power. The Mayans also thought that gods were cross-eyed, so a king's mother would often tie a little toy to the front of her baby's hair. The toy hung down between the baby's eyes so that he had to cross his eyes to look at it. Because the Mayans believed that their kings were divine, they allowed the kings to have complete power. Over in Europe, other nations, like England, were beginning to put limits on the powers of the king. But in Central America, the king could still declare any law and have it carried out. Despite his power, a Mayan king did have one unpleasant job to do. The Mayans fought many wars against the other Central American tribes around them. They believed that the gods would come down into the world of men and give them victory, but only if the king opened a door for the gods by shedding some of his own blood. So before a battle, the king had to pierce his ear or his finger or nose and let the blood run out. And often the Mayans would sacrifice their captives from a battle to give more blood to the gods. Even the Mayan games ended in bloodshed. The Mayans liked to play a ball game in which the players tried to knock a ball through a ring 20 feet off the ground. They were allowed to use their elbows, wrists, and hips, but not their hands or feet. As soon as one player hit the ball through the ring, he was declared the winner. He was given a jade necklace, gold bracelets, and sacks full of treasure. The losers were taken up into the temple and had their heads cut off. The huge Mayan cities lasted for centuries, but late in the Middle Ages, the Mayan people began to leave their cities. They deserted their temples and their houses. Grass and jungle weeds began to grow over the stones. Eventually, the cities crumbled away into the jungle. What happened? The cities grew so big that the ground around them couldn't grow enough food to support the city's inhabitants. Hurricanes and earthquakes swept across the Yucatan Peninsula, wrecking houses and temples. The people were growing tired of the cruelty and violence of their kings. and another Central American tribe, the Aztecs, was growing stronger and attacking the Mayan cities with its armies. The Mayan Empire began to crumble. By the time Columbus arrived, the Mayan people no longer had an empire. They lived in small separate tribes throughout the land they had once ruled, and the Aztecs had become the greatest nation in Central America. The marvelous city of Tenochtitlan. The Aztecs were even more warlike than the Mayans. We don't know where the Aztecs first came from, but we do know that as they wandered through Central America, they fought battle after battle with the other tribes who lived there. Whenever they won, they forced the conquered tribes to give them food, money, and soldiers for their army. The Aztecs grew richer and stronger, but they still had no homeland. As they roamed through the highlands of Central America, the Aztecs came to the edge of a wide lake. The edges of the lake were soft and marshy, filled with reeds. Little islands dotted its surface. On one of these islands, a large cactus grew, and on the cactus sat an eagle, holding a snake in its talons. When the Aztec priests saw the eagle, they cried out, "It is a sign from the sun god. He wishes us to settle here. His divine power will be with us if we build our capital city on the island of the eagle." The Aztecs wanted to please the sun god, but when they launched their canoes and paddled over to the island, they found that much of it was soft and muddy. How could they build a city on marshy land? The Aztecs were determined to find a way, and so they hauled basketfuls of dry earth and stones from the land around the lake and dumped the earth onto the muddy beaches. They pulled basketfuls of mud up from the lake bottom and filled in the pools and swamps. They cut poles from the trees surrounding the lake, drove the poles down into the bottom of the lake, and attached reed mats to the poles. Then they filled the fenced-in areas with more dirt and mud. Slowly, the island became larger and drier. The Aztecs built more and more houses in their new city. They named it Tenochtitlan. Today, the lake where Tenochtitlan stood is called Lake Texcoco. More and more people came to live in Tenochtitlan. Even though the island was not very big, this floating city had over 100,000 Aztecs living in it. More parts of the lake were filled in so that stone buildings could be raised. Canals etched with stone channeled the water away from the foundations of the city. The canals also acted as streets. Often, the Aztecs traveled through their capital city by canoe. Smaller cities grew up around the edge of the lake. The people who lived in these cities grew corn, squash, tomatoes, and beans, paddled canoes full of food over to Tenochtitlan, and sold the food to the city dwellers. But the Aztecs of Tenochtitlan didn't rely on the shore for all their food. They learned how to grow crops in the lake. They wove reeds into huge mats and floated these mats in the water. They covered the surface of the mats with dirt and planted seeds in the dirt. When the plants sprang up, their roots grew down through the dirt, through the mats, and into the water. Sometimes the roots reached all the way down into the bottom of the lake. These crops never died from drought or sun. They always had plenty of water. Some Aztecs even built small houses on their floating garden mats. The Aztecs ate food from the lake as well. They caught fish, but they also cooked and ate water lizards, salamanders, frogs, and fish eggs. One Aztec delicacy was cakes made out of algae that had been pressed and dried. For meat, they hunted the ducks and birds that swam on the lake's surface, as well as deer and rabbits that roamed on the lake shores. On special occasions, they drank fermented cactus juice. But getting drunk was against the Aztec laws. Anyone who got drunk could be put to death. The Aztecs also learned how to make a brand new food, chocolate. The rich dirt around the lake was a perfect place to grow cacao trees, small fruit trees that bear fruit like melons, each almost a foot long. When the purple fruit of the cacao tree turned brown, the Aztecs would pick the fruit and scoop out the insides. But they weren't after the pulp inside the fruit. They wanted the seeds. Each cacao fruit might have 30 or 40 seeds in it. The Aztecs pounded these cacao beans into fine powder, boiled them with corn flour into a soupy paste, strained the paste into a thin brown liquid, and then added vanilla and honey to it. The result? Chocolate. This chocolate was probably bitter and grainy, not smooth and creamy like the chocolate we have today. Today, chocolate makers add milk, sugar, and extra butter to chocolate to make it sweeter and softer. But the Aztecs didn't think their chocolate was bitter. Chocolate was one of their favorite foods. Rich people drank it from golden cups. Cacao beans were as valuable as gold. The Aztecs even used them for money. Chocolate, they thought, was food worthy of the gods. Tenochtitlan could only be reached by three raised earthen roads that ran through the lake, and between each road and the gates of the city was a moat. Usually, this moat was filled with heavy logs that allowed horses and carts to cross over into Tenochtitlan. But when the Aztecs were at war, they rolled the logs out of the moat. Then no one could cross into the city on foot, and the Aztecs needed to be able to defend their city because they fought with everyone around them. Even though they had a beautiful capital city and plenty to eat and drink, they raided nearby tribes and kidnapped men, women, and children to sacrifice to their gods. The Aztecs were prosperous, but they were also hated by the other tribes of Central America. The Incas. When Spanish and Portuguese explorers landed in the New World, they found the Aztecs flourishing in Central America. They met Mayans living in small scattered tribes throughout Central America. But when they traveled south, down into the continent of South America, they found yet another great civilization, the civilization of the Incas. The Incas lived in the mountains that run along the western coast of South America. Today we call this area Peru. Like the Mayans, the Incas believed that their king was descended from the sun god. Here is the story they told about the beginnings of their civilization. Inti, the god of the sun, presided over the earth. Each day he rose and soared above it, looking down on it from the clouds. Each evening he sank down beneath it and swam through the waters that lie beneath the earth, back to the earth's far side, so that he could rise and soar over it again. But when Inti looked down on the earth, he wasn't pleased with what he saw. The people who lived there were like beasts. They lived in the grass and ate what they could catch with their bare hands. Their hair grew in long, tangled knots. They wore no clothes, and when they met each other, they fought like wild animals. So Inti said to his great queen, Pachamama, who ruled the earth, "Look at these people. They live like animals in the dirt. We must teach them to build cities and roads, to wear clothes, and to live together in peace." Pachamama agreed. So the ruler of the sun and the ruler of the earth summoned their son and daughter into their presence. "My children," the sun god Inti said, "we are going to send you down to the earth to teach the people who live there how to be civilized. Take with you this magical golden staff. When it leaps from your hand and sinks into the earth, there you will build a great city." The son and daughter agreed. Now the gods can enter the world of men, but they must do so through a door of still water. Inti's son and daughter found the door in Lake Titicaca. They passed through the door, rose from the lake, and began to walk through the world of men. Everywhere they found hunger, fear, and disease. Wherever they went, they taught men to speak, to build houses, to use herbs and spells to heal their disease, to grow food, to dress and cut their hair. Men began to stand up from the earth and to live as human beings. And Inti's son, Manco Capac, carried the magical golden staff with him everywhere they traveled. One day, as they walked through a fertile valley, the golden staff leapt from Manco Capac's hand and sank deep into the earth. "Here is where we must build our city," Manco Capac said to his sister. So they began to build. Soon men came from all around to live in this city built by the gods themselves. They named the city Cuzco, and the sons and grandsons and great-grandsons of Manco Capac, son of the god Inti, sat on the throne in Cuzco until this day. Cuzco was the capital city of the Incan Empire. This story claims to tell how Cuzco was built and why the king of the Incas had the right to rule there. Today, archaeologists can see from the ruins of Cuzco that it was a great city where thousands of Incas once lived. It had straight streets paved with cobblestones. The houses were made of stone, cut so carefully that the blocks fit firmly together without any mortar. They had very small doors and no windows because the mountain air was so cold. And the city itself is laid out in the shape of a puma, an animal sacred to the Incas. The Incan people never learned to write, and they kept no histories. So we don't know very much about most of the Incan kings, but we do know that an Incan king named Huayna Capac became king of the Incas in 1493, the year after Columbus first landed in America. Huayna Capac ruled over an empire that stretched along the coast of South America for 2,500 miles, almost as long as the United States is wide. He built good, wide roads all throughout his empires. Traders went back and forth on these roads, carrying their goods on llamas. These goods, beautiful cloth woven from the wool of llamas and sheep and dyed in bright colors, pottery jars, often made in the shape of animals or of men's heads, jewelry of gold and turquoise, traveled from one end of the empire to the other. The governors of the different cities all along the roads sent messages to each other as well, using a complicated code of knots tied into colored rope. Messengers ran along the roads, carrying these ropes from one city to the next. But when Huayna Capac died, he divided his empire between his two sons. One ruled the north, the other ruled the south. Soon these two brothers began to fight with each other. Hundreds of Inca warriors died on both sides. The kingdoms of both brothers grew weaker and poorer. When more Spanish explorers arrived, anxious to settle down in the new continent they had discovered, the two warring kings were too weak to resist. The Spanish marched over those broad, smooth Incan roads from one end of the empire to the other and destroyed it.